Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Well, it's already 200 episodes of the podcast here, now officially titled Film Nerds, No More Film Nerds Unlimited, because, well, this is all we do now, apparently, so why not? And with every 50 episodes or so, we do a top three list, usually a very difficult top three list. And this time, it's yet another difficult topic. It's our top three favorite actors of all time. So I'm here with Craig Hamilton, and we are going to count ours down from number three. How you doing, Craig?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful, and I wanted to wish you a happy birthday today on this 200th episode of Film Nerds Limited. Not limited, just Film Nerds.
Well, thank you very much. I would say hopefully I have birthdays unlimited, but we all know that's not true because everybody dies. So who's your third favorite actor of all time?
Three. Three is probably the cruelest number, don't you think?
Yes.
Because I came up with about 35.
Yep, I've got a lot actors. Of potential threes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I've got 28 honorable mentions. I've got seven favorite actors. I've got two or three that I could, you know, pretty easily kind of toss out. I've got two that I think are definitely my top two, but I've got about three or four that probably are could end up in the top three. So I've got to make a decision right now. That's a tough one. My third favorite actor. It's so hard, man. Why are we doing this on your birthday?
These are the best episodes because they're so cruel. Everybody's always so mad at me for coming up with this idea.
I know, and this is, I'm looking at my top two, and I'm like, is that ranking correct?
Yeah. It's like a Band-Aid, man. You just got to pull it off, put it out there, and then live with it for the rest of your life.
So, you know, okay, so I'll just say, Sidney Poitier is one of my favorites. I'm going to have to take him off the top three. Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm going to take him off the top three. He's amazing. Probably Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. Wow, got to take him off the top three, though. Man, Paul Newman or William Holden. And I just snuck in all my top six. So I'll probably go with, I'm going to go with Paul Newman as my number three.
Okay.
Yeah, I really just sat back and I sat right beside a circular saw in motion, and I thought about the almost a discography, the filmography of some of these guys, and you know, really, I think a lot of it has to do with what my favorite movies are on their filmographies. And I just think some of those guys that I just mentioned, that some of my favorite movies, they carry on their shoulders. I think Paul Newman, though, when you see, you know, Cool Hand Luke and how amazing he is in that, and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, how he can – that could have been a really silly movie if not for, you know, handled – certain ways by George Roy Hill, and for, you know, Paul Newman's ability to kind of walk that line there too. You know, I saw the movie Hud and by Martin Ritt, which is an incredibly underrated movie. And man, Paul Newman is just, that's an incredible movie anyway. So Paul Newman is great in that, plays a heelish character. And he's, you know, he worked up until, you know, he was, working up until almost till after he died. Did you know that? Did you know he was working after he died? The ghost of Paul Newman was in Cars 3.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, I thought there was a slight controversy about that, yeah.
Well, they had enough foresight to get his voice in for the third film in the trilogy, but not enough foresight to actually make a decent trilogy.
I was going to say, yeah, those movies are like a Swiss watch, the way they're constructed, for sure. I mean, look, I mean, you got The Hustler too, and Color of Money, of course, and The Verdict. And you, I mean, you mentioned his heelish performance in Hud, which I haven't seen, but I want to. I also haven't seen Hombre, but I want to. But yeah, he's kind of that guy. He's like, in so many of his movies, he's this guy with a slap shot is another good one. He's got this propensity to be this bastard, but always ends up, you know, making the right choice, at least, you know, for a limited period of time. And he has this kind of on-screen charisma and charm that is just, like, you know, unmistakable. And, you know, it's just like you – doesn't matter what he's doing on screen, even if it's kind of dastardly – you're drawn to the guy, and you feel like, no, if I hang out with him, he'll eventually do the right thing.
Well, you say something about Paul Newman being heelish. I think he does a in several different roles, he kind of makes that balance of having that kind of heelish the demeanor of a heel, where he plays the role of sort of a guy that's not great. It's not really a really great guy, but he balances that into someone that the audience likes or pulls for or doesn't really want to just completely hate, despite what his actions or decisions in the movies may be. But yeah, so that's, did we go through everything? The Sting, Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah, Road to Perdition.
Yes. And then The Towering Inferno, which we don't have to talk about.
Of course, classic. Yeah, I got to go back to The Verdict. Have you seen Sidney Lumet's The Verdict?
No.
Oh, man, it's fantastic.
Show for Shame, for sure.
Yeah, it's great. Well, it was on my Show for Shame last year, I think, and it was wonderful. David Mamet's script, it's an amazing Paul Newman performance, and it's kind of, you know, it's possibly the height of his, this guy that is, we want to like this guy so bad, but he keeps doing stuff that makes us not. So, yeah, and whenever Paul Newman comes up, there's just a comfort on screen that he has. And I feel like that's something that goes through all of my picks and honorable mentions, is actors that are comfortable on screen and just seem to be able to spend time there. And that's something I get from Paul Newman. He's just, there's nothing pretentious or finicky about him. He seems to just perfectly live on a piece of film.
Yep, he's completely authentic. What you see is what you get, all the way down to the salad dressing.
Which is delicious.
It is.
So my number three, I had a lot of, like you, I had a lot of, you know, names swapping out, and even as we speak, I think my number two just swapped out, honestly. But my number three is somebody that, once I realized how high he was, I was like, well, yeah, he's on my list, and he's staying there, and he's not going anywhere. And it's John Goodman. And he's just one of those guys that he's so sneaky in putting together this body of work that makes him, I don't know, he's kind of like the consummate character actor, supporting actor. But he could do anything, you know? I mean, he even had a stretch of time there where he was a leading man in The Babe, and The Flintstones, and King Ralph. Not that any of those movies are classics, although King Ralph is somewhat relevant at this point. But I think that John Goodman is just this sincere guy who sells anything that you put in front of him. My favorite performances, of course, are Barton Fink and the Big Lebowski and his Coen Brothers work, Raising Arizona, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. That's kind of the bulk of his work for me. But then just recently, his supporting role in 10 Cloverfield Lane, I think, was just one of those casting decisions that just really blew me away. And he's a guy that he pops up all over the place. I don't check out everything he does because he works so much. I'm not a Roseanne nerd or anything like that. But John Goodman is just one of those actors that, when I look at my favorite movies, he seems to be a constant thing, and he's able to do so much. He's terrifying at times. He's gentle at times and endearing. And then, yeah, he can just turn on a dime. So John Goodman is my number three.
Yeah, that, and I think his role in Cloverfield Lane, that's, let me, I should specify the correct title, 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's kind of a, maybe a risky cast, not casting choice, but I think it's a good casting choice, a risky role for him to take, because, spoilers, this is a really kind of a classic bad guy. And while, you know, he's not maybe, he maybe is not the epitome of, like, you know, choosing roles that are just, you know, inherently good, his performance there gives you the, if you will, the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
I mean,
and he just turns on a dime. I mean, and you go back to Barton Fink, where he basically plays both an everyman and Satan himself, possibly, in the same movie. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think that's just, like, the ultimate John Goodman performance of just this giant of a man who contains within him, you know, this gentle, kind simpleton, but also this screaming, dangerous maniac. That's my number three.
Also, Monsters, Inc. and Monsters University.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Monsters University is actually a really... Those two movies are, it's a really good thing to mention, just the change that he goes through, especially in Monsters University, you know, where he believably plays a cocky college kid, you know, who turns into the more caring character that we meet in the first film. So, yeah, great call there.
Well, so my number two, and this is really, I'm really kind of mad at you for assigning us this, because this is so cruel. But I guess Jimmy Stewart is going to be my number two.
Yeah.
What I did was I just took all these actors, and I really narrowed it down to a group of the ones that I like the best, personally. And then I looked at as many of their filmographies as I could, and then that helped me narrow it down, but it still it hurts. It really hurts.
Absolutely.
But Jimmy Stewart is, he's not what you would call the most versatile actor, I don't think. And what I mean by that is he's kind of like Brad Pitt in a way, or Brad Pitt's kind of like, I don't know.
He's not a chameleon.
Yeah, you see Jimmy Stewart in every movie, right?
Yeah, it's a version. It's a different aspect of Jimmy Stewart.
Yes, yes. But his acting is great. He wouldn't be my number two if I didn't think he was one of the best ever, but he just has this kind of way about him that it's, you can't help but see this kind of wholesome figure in a way. And I think he chose his roles very carefully too. I think in particular, Rear Window is one of my all-time favorite movies. And what does he do except just sit there and look through a camera telescope or whatever it's called.
Lens.
But wow, I mean, what a performance, you know? I think, yeah, obviously I'm going to mention It's a Wonderful Life because you have to. That's iconic. A Philadelphia Story. I'm not crazy about that era of slapstick comedy, but man, him and Katharine Hepburn in that movie are so great together.
Oh, yeah.
I think Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is one of his best performances. Rope is great. Of course, Vertigo and Anatomy of a Murder, also very good. And then The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, I think, is one of those where maybe he's a little different than, maybe that role is a little bit different in just that he sort of dabbles in, you know, Maybe his character toes the line or walks the straight line the whole time, but he's sort of gazing over to the other side of the fence where, you know, you don't always, you know, this is the West. You don't always do things the right way to get things done. But,
he had that wholesome figure, but he was also willing to play against that, you know, and I mean, obviously Hitchcock did that in Vertigo. and Rear Window, where in Rear Window, he's not, it's not necessarily like a dark performance, but he is allowing this level of anxiety and paranoia to envelop him that you don't see very much in some of his early work. But then I've never seen any of his Anthony Mann westerns, like Winchester 73, but from what I understand, that's kind of dark side Jimmy Stewart as well.
Yeah.
And those have been on my list to see for a long time. But yes, Jimmy Stewart and Paul Newman both spent time in my top three. So I'm glad you mentioned them because they did kind of float out. And I had the same issue with you where it's just like, I've just got this like pile of names and I don't know exactly what to do with them. So how this top three shakes out is, I try to kind of make it unique and personal, but I'm glad that we're catching folks that also would have been on my list. And my number two was, and I did want to represent kind of one of my favorite eras of Hollywood and kind of that star system, the height of the star system. And my number two was Cary Grant for some time, for a lot of the same reasons you mentioned Jimmy Stewart, but you know, obviously more on the upper class side of things. But I was talking to my wife about this list the other day, and she was like trying to guess who would be on it. She was like, so Harrison Ford. And I was like, well, no, that's too easy. And she was like, what? And then I realized, like, as we were talking, I was like, you know what, if I'm honest with myself, Harrison Ford is my number two. And
all right.
It's not necessarily for the body of work. Obviously, there is the long stretch of time before he kind of got back on the horse in The Force Awakens. I like Indiana Jones in The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and his performance in that, but I'll be willing to admit that, you know, from, Clear and Present Danger, after Clear and Present Danger to The Force Awakens, Harrison Ford had a pretty rough patch there where he was in things like Firewall and Hollywood Homicide and movies that I haven't seen, but I've not heard good things about. None of that diminishes the fact that in 1980 and 1981 and 1982 and in the 80s and late 70s, Harrison Ford was one of the most enigmatic and magnetic screen presences we have ever seen. And he's Indiana Jones. He's Han Solo. He brings a self-deprecating quality and a danger and a ordinariness to the leading man that we just hadn't gotten. He's like big budget Paul Newman in that kind of way. You know, there is this edge, this sense of danger, and this sense of helplessness to Harrison Ford that you see even as early as American Graffiti, where he just plays this cocky jerk. You know, you see this false confidence that he's projecting that is going to give way to vulnerability as soon as the going gets tough. I think he's just a really interesting screen presence. I'm glad he's kind of having a resurgence now with The Force Awakens and Blade Runner. If I'm honest with myself, Harrison Ford is just one of my favorite actors of all time. And there's plenty of things I've yet to see. I haven't seen Witness or the Mosquito Coast, his two Peter Weir movies. I haven't seen the Roman Polanski movie that I forget the name of. So there's plenty of Harrison Ford that I still need to check out. I'm looking forward to seeing it, especially from that golden age of the late 70s to 80s.
Well, skip Firewall.
You know, Morning Glory is a fairly recent Harrison Ford romantic, or not romantic comedy, but just comedy that I think works pretty well and uses his star presence as this old grump. Really well. So, yeah, you know, there's some latter-day Ford that's not bad, but, yeah, you know, I should probably, you know, complete it all and check out Firewall, you know, maybe when we get off the phone here.
Maybe. But, you know, he really hasn't lost that magnetism that you talk about from the late 70s, early 80s. As far as the public eye goes, everyone remembers him as that. And for all intents and purposes, he is that. Maybe not in the movies today so much, but what he did back then, I still see in the public and the media, he still encapsulates that for them.
Yeah, I think he's, I mean, not to put the blame on anybody but him, because it's up to him, you know, whether he's going to do the work or not. But at the same time, I do think he is maybe kind of like Sean Connery was. I think he's just this victim of the way that Hollywood has changed and the way that the material has changed. And I think that there may be a part of him that's like, really, like, all we're making now is versions of Star Wars. Like, you know, I just think that he may not be seeing the roles out there that he wants to play. But then again, he was in Expendables 3, so maybe he'll take whatever the hell as long as you pay him. So I don't know. And or if he gets to pretend to fly a plane, maybe that's the key.
If you go from sort of saving the galaxy or saving, you know, the world from Nazis to, you know, during his later years, playing a cuckold. or one who thinks he is being cuckolded. I wonder how close he was to being in Unfaithful.
Wow, yeah. I mean, look at Richard Gere's career. I mean, he has had so many really well-regarded performances in the last 10 to 20 years. And I feel like, yeah, that's what Harrison Ford should have been doing. You know, it's just like this graceful aging thing. But instead, he, you know, he felt like he had to keep punching people, or playing the cop.
Still, Richard Gere is like a poor man's Harrison Ford. But you, now that I'm thinking about that, doesn't it make sense for Harrison Ford to be in Snakes on a Plane?
There you go. Wow, that's the crossing the two, right. What if Indiana Jones became the president and had to deal with the snakes instead of the Russians?
And instead, our president is a snake. Hey, can you cut that out?
And deals with Russians. So we're just moving along. So who is your number one favorite actor of all time? Whatever you say is going to be written on your tombstone, so make it count.
Okay, for all of you left still listening to a movie podcast that is created in the Alabama, Tennessee area, my favorite actor of all time, bar none, Runaway. I'm just kidding. It's not a Runaway. It's all very, very close, okay? Tom Hanks.
Interesting. Tom Hanks is my number one.
Hello.
And Tom Hanks is one of the reasons I didn't put Jimmy Stewart on the list, because I feel like oftentimes they're kind of compared, you know, they do the every man American kind of thing. But I felt like I could only have one of those guys on there. But yeah, Tom Hanks is great, and he keeps being great, and he doesn't have the De Niro Harrison Ford thing where in his latter days he's letting go. He's actually still putting in career best performances. So you go talk about Tom Hanks a little bit, and then I'll go.
Yeah, okay. Well, Toy Story. I don't want to overlook the animated work from
apparently
Tom,
not.
Et cetera.
Yes.
But man, that's gonna be when he's done with Toy Story. When Toy Story's done, that's gonna be in like 50 years or so. That's gonna be like such a legacy. He also has this way of, he's got these mannerisms that exist in every role, I think he does. But, I mean, with few exceptions. But again, it's not like he transforms or anything. It's what I like about him, and that's why I like him, and that's why I like what he's in. You know, it kind of benefits him in that way. I think some of my favorite roles, one of the underrated roles that he was in that I really like, maybe it's not underrated, it's just not talked about very much. He's great in A League of Their Own.
Yes.
And Saving Mr. Banks, I thought he was wonderful in Saving Mr.
Yes.
Banks. One of the main reasons I like that movie.
That's kind of the only reason I like that movie, is just because he totally conveys that snake oil salesman, but still fatherly uncle thing about Walt Disney that we love so much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to step on your toes here for what
No,
you're
go ahead.
About, but The Lady Killers, I think that's one of his greatest performances.
So in 2004, I mean, he's a guy that it's so easy to say, well, Tom Hanks is kind of, you know, he's got his type that he plays, and he is that in every movie, and it's a version of it. And for the most part, his filmography is that Jimmy Stewart thing, where it's just kind of different grades of Tom Hanks. But then you forget that he is such a good comedic actor that he can totally ham it up, or at least kind of go off the deep end. And 2004, I mean, The Lady Killers is a great performance. It's so funny. He also had The Terminal that year, which is both a very funny comedic performance, but also very heartfelt and sincere. And then a few years ago, he did Cloud Atlas, where he plays all sorts of bizarre characters. And he's willing to take risks on top of the more mainstream things that he takes. But when he does the mainstream thing, when he plays a version of Tom Hanks, you get Apollo 13 or Bridge of Spies or Castaway. Saving Private Ryan, right. And you get these characters that are, even though they don't have wacky hair or crazy voices or, you know, they're not Daniel Day-Lewis characters, but they are equally as sincere and believable. And that's the thing with Tom Hanks. I just buy it. Like, I buy this guy when he's on screen, and I feel like that's not just what makes him a great movie star and a great actor. I feel like that's what makes him a great figure in our culture, of just this guy that, like, man, I trust this guy so much. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I've said this before, but if Bill Cosby, you know, he's not the guy that we thought he was, apparently. But if, like, something like that ever comes out about Tom Hanks, that he's just, like, a monster, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, because it's like, if I can't trust Tom Hanks, then I'm going to go live in the woods by myself, because that's it. That's humanity right there. But yeah, it's, and I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention something as recent as David S. Pumpkins. Like, that's incredible, you know? And it's like, this guy is this prestigious Oscar-winning actor who's not afraid to get silly, and when he gets silly, it's fantastic and totally committed. And this is something where, like, a few years ago, I was like, I think Tom Hanks is my favorite actor, but I'm not going to say that, because I like Spielberg a lot, and everybody's going to just think that I'm just the guy that likes the boring dad things that dads like. And then I saw Captain Phillips, and spoilers for Captain Phillips, there's a moment at the end of that movie where Tom Hanks' character just dissolves before our eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the moment where I was like, no, this guy is this guy is great. He's the greatest actor we've got. He is so willing to completely bear everything in front of, you know, hundreds of millions of people and just go to pieces and in such an honest way. And it's such a simple, Paul Greengrass should be credited a lot with, you know, giving him that space and that playground. But yeah, and then of course Bridge of Spies recently, which is far less, you know, gushing emotional stuff, but it is just that great Tom Hanks steadfastness and complexity. And like you said, he has those things that he does, those affectations, those decisions he's making as an actor that are consistent, but they all always support his sincerity and the trustworthiness and the fact that when this guy is on screen, I buy it every time.
Yeah, you know, and in that moment at Phillips, I had the same experience. He goes into shock, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. And it's almost like any other actor or actress that's trying to do something, like, really dramatic where they just kind of lose their minds, you kind of would say, yeah, that's kind of a, you know, they did a good job of acting like they're, you know, traumatized. But you're looking at someone, it's like Tom Hanks goes into shock. It's really crazy. It's like almost too much, because you're like, in reality, watching someone go into shock. And
yeah, like, I don't want to be here anymore.
It would be too much. So
yeah.
But it's not too much in the movie. Yeah, and I think sincerity, I think you hit the nail on the head with him. It's his sincerity. And I think in Apollo 13, that sincerity comes across. And just, here's a guy who's his last shot to go to the moon, and he's up there, and now he may not ever come back down. And it's just the sincerity is just all there for you to see. Of course, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I was about to say we've ranted about Tom Hanks and have yet to mention Forrest Gump or Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I think Spielberg has a lot to do with Tom Hanks' success, even though Tom Hanks exists completely outside of a Spielberg bubble.
Yeah, and he won his Oscars before he ever worked with Spielberg.
Yeah. Yeah, but in a similar way, in a similar reason for me liking Spielberg, I also kind of like Tom Hanks.
Yep, absolutely. There's a sincerity and an honesty and just a devotion to, I don't know, film form, you know, classic film form. But I'd be remiss also if I didn't mention The Money Pit, which is one of my favorite performances of all time. There's a moment in The Money Pit where the bathtub... they go through all this ordeal to get hot water, and finally they've got enough hot water, and Tom Hanks is just exasperated, and he pours hot water into this bathtub, and the floor falls out, and the bathtub just, like, falls through the floor down to the first floor and just smashes and shatters, and Tom Hanks laughs, and that's the joke, and the way he laughs is, like, psychotic. And it's a clip that's on YouTube, and when I was a kid, I watched The Money Pit a lot, and that laugh makes me laugh still. Like, anytime if I go watch it right now, I will crack up because it's so brilliant, and he just loses his mind. He's just like, he's able to just totally be that steadfast presence, but then also be unhinged, and
he's able to be that, I don't know, would you call it a heartthrob? Maybe not, but the male presence in a chick flick, which he's done.
Sure, yeah. Yes, Sleepless in Seattle, and yeah.
And You've Got Mail, which I have a really hard time watching You've Got Mail, but I love Tom Hanks in that movie. Charlie Wilson's War, and even in this Da Vinci Code series, where he's the guy at the head of something, the
lead.
Anyway, it's not a great series, but it's...
No, but there's a part in the end of the Da Vinci Code, the movie, is like Tom Hanks thinking while he's shaving and then like running somewhere because he remembered something. And it's like, wow, that's compelling because it's Tom Hanks. Like,
right.
Put anyone else in that very flat, not very interesting movie, and you wouldn't get that. But yeah, like, I remember walking out and telling somebody, like, that wasn't a great movie, but there's a shot where Tom Hanks is shaving, and I was interested in what was going on in his head, and that means that Tom Hanks is great.
Yeah, and, you know, those books are page-turners for sure, and I think he's perfect for that role. But, hey, you know, I think we've talked way too much about the Da Vinci Code.
I think so, too. So what are some of your honorable mentions your top three?
Okay, I think I mentioned William Holden, Daniel Day-Lewis, Sidney Poitier, and Jack Nicholson. There are some guys that I like to mention. The list is way too long of the, you know, people that are no longer with us. But I think there's a couple that are gone too soon, like Heath Ledger and Philip Seymour Hoffman, that probably would have been had they worked a little bit more. And then they technically, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of my favorites, but it's a shame we didn't get to see what all they could do. People still working right now is, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. I think they're doing great work together in Sherlock, the BBC series, and also on their own. DiCaprio, Ralph Fiennes, and also I'll say Bill Murray because I just love everything he's in. That's not true. I didn't love Broken Flowers. But I love him and everything he's in. So,
yeah.
I just left off about 15, you know, great actors. I just didn't feel like mentioning them.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, this list was all about people who I enjoy seeing on screen, seeing behaving and saying things and acting, not necessarily, like, the all-time great performance. So, like, obviously Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, belongs on any great actor list, and he is one of my favorite actors, but, you know, there's a different type of presence there. But for me, a guy that almost very close to making my top three is Jeff Goldblum, who, like, It's an unhealthy. I think I just want to be friends with Jeff Goldblum, you know. So it's like anytime I see him in a movie, it's like I don't know if he's giving a good performance or not, but like, don't leave. Like, come on, man. Like, let's go get some pizza or something. Like, yeah. I wish you were my friend. So like in Grand Budapest Hotel, obviously, yeah. and Jurassic Park and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and you know he always does these interesting things, and I'm glad that he's getting more work these days. Jeff Goldblum, I will be totally honest that Arnold Schwarzenegger was spent some time on my top three because I don't think there's an actor alive who I've watched more hours of in movies over my lifetime, and I think that he has an interesting and physical screen presence that is unmatched, and that's why he's, you know, so that's why he's still working today, and I think still doing good work, even though he doesn't have that physique that he used to have. Buster Keaton is another physical performer that was on the list. Toshirô Mifune from Akira Kurosawa movies and others. Denzel Washington is a guy that, again, like I just trust Denzel Washington. You know, even if he's playing a villain, like I'm listening. You know, and I want to hear what this guy has to say. You mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman and Jack Nicholson, Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, both I think are really great young actors. I think another guy that, I mean, I just saw Dunkirk, and Tom Hardy has an on-screen presence that is very compelling. Like every performance that he gives, I highly recommend a movie he did a few years ago called Lock, which is basically just Tom Hardy on a cell phone in a car for an hour and a half. And it's super compelling because he's a really, really good actor. The only other name I really failed to mention was Robert Mitchum. He was another guy that was very close to making my top three. Cape Fear and Night of the Hunter. And this crazy 70s movie called The Wrath of God. He's just this, I just buy everything that Mitchum does and says on screen. And again, you mentioned William Holden. We mentioned Cary Grant. So the list goes on and on, but these are a few of mine. So yeah, this was a tough one.
It is very tough. But yeah, I echo all your sentiments on those other choices. And Tom Hardy as well. I know it's not a movie. It's a TV show, but Peaky Blinders. He has a really incredible character in Peaky Blinders as well. He's great. I don't know if I'd want to go get pizza with him.
No.
Like Jeff Goldblum. But
right.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah, I feel like he'd take my pizza and then push me down.
Yeah. That's the like best thing. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah, that's the exactly. Yep. Yeah, but yeah, this was a lot of fun. This was a fun list to make, and it's making me. Oftentimes I overlook actors. I'll be honest. I'm very much a you know, camera, like, style, editing, tone, theme kind of guy. And so performances I often overlook. But when I looked at this list, I was like, wow, so much of the reason that I love movies is because of actors. And the same thing when we did our actresses list. So thanks for putting together your list, and thanks for talking to me about this, Craig.
Anytime.
This is Ben Flanagan, and I'm joined by Graham Flanagan, and it's our turn here on Film Nerds Unlimited, episode 200, to share our top three favorite actors of all time. What's up, Graham?
Hey, Ben, how's it going? I have a feeling we might overlap a little bit on this list. We'll see.
It's possible.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I think this is probably the safest I'll have played any list that we've done on Film Nerds so far, because I don't know about you, and if you want to get into your criteria quickly before we start listing, actors are very important, obviously, to me and obviously to movies, but actors are never really something that I've ever found myself ranking or listing throughout my entire movie-going life. I've been so concentrated on the movies themselves and the directors more than anything, so it's really difficult, as it was when we named our top three favorite actresses of all time, for me to just sit there and come up with favorite actors. But I took some time and I came up with three actors whose movies are really important to me, and the movies wouldn't have been possible without their performances. So maybe it was even easier than I thought it was. So what about you?
Yeah, I just sort of thought about the actors that have just consistently delivered over the years, who have large bodies of work and where they're like multiple movies of in which they appeared that really resonated with me, that I love, that I've gone back and watched over and over again. And I mean, yeah, like you said, you know, well, I mean, for me growing up, usually the first sort of member of the cast or crew that I would associate with a movie was the actor. Took a while before you started thinking about directors and then cinematographers and all that. Now it was always the actors are the face of the movie. And so they are, you know, they are what you see in the movie. They're the vehicle through which the writer and directors tell the story. So I'm pumped and I'm ready to jump into it.
Okay. What's your number three?
Number three is Woody Allen. He has appeared, he sort of created a Scream persona, for himself, you know, but it's been modified slightly depending on the story in the movie, but he consistently shows up. I love that persona. It's, been the center of so many great movies, most of which he's directed, but you know, that we saw sort of the era of which that we're most familiar with is starting with Annie Hall. And but before that, you had him as a screwball comedian who could also do really great sort of silent movie comedy style acting in the same vein as like Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. But for so many years, I mean, even to this day, he's still able to, you know, he's not, I think he might have fallen off a little bit, but you know, he doesn't even act very much anymore. But man, for the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, and part of the early 2000s, anytime Woody Allen was starring in one of his own movies, I was instantly on board, and sometimes it worked better than others, but absolutely one of my favorite screen actors of all time.
One of mine, too. He's on my honorable mentions list, and I want to make another quick note. My top three actors are just very famous leading men movie stars, something I just, for whatever reason, couldn't avoid. And my number three is Jack Nicholson, who obviously hasn't been in the spotlight for a while now, really since, I guess, his last leading role is The Bucket List, and that's not a reason that he's necessarily on my list. I guess his last performance that people really loved was The Departed, which was 11 years ago now, which is crazy, and he's been cast in this upcoming remake of this German movie, Tony Erdmann, so we'll see what he still has left in the tank. I'm sure plenty, but I just look back at my favorite stuff from his insane filmography, and the guy is just such an immense and just wonderful brand onto himself. He has unbelievable presence and command when he's on screen, just totally unique. And you know, I think that there are times where you could lump him into the same category as a Woody Allen or a Clint Eastwood or a John Wayne, even, where you're kind of getting the same Jack Nicholson with everything. You know, like I think some might suggest that he doesn't have the range as a lot of other really terrific method actors. I would disagree for the following reasons. Some of my favorite performances, obviously you have classics like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and The Last Detail and Five Easy Pieces for a lot of people. The Shining is obviously one that sticks out, which is a big performance where he's sort of bouncing off the walls like a Looney Tune. But I look at stuff like About Schmidt, which I think may be my favorite performance of his, where he just reined it all in, internalized everything, obviously, until the final moments of that movie where you just get this huge swath of emotion. It just showed that this guy was still at the peak of his powers relatively late in his career, and just he could play things differently. And he's just so charming. He's so funny. Nobody delivers lines like Jack Nicholson. And I look at stuff like Carnal Knowledge in Terms of Endearment, where he won a Best Supporting Actress. So the fact that even though he was an enormous star, he could come in and play a smaller role where he still was able to steal scenes. It's really amazing. And I also love, obviously, his performance as Batman, as the Joker in Batman in 1989. Just full of iconic performances, and the guy is just, he's just so likable.
Yeah, before we move on, let's for each of these, let's say what our favorite performances of theirs, and we'll get back to Woody Allen in a second, but for me, I mean, while you want to say The Shining and probably should say it, for me, Jack Nicholson, my favorite performance of his is the Joker. Saw it at such a young age, and just, you know, you want to talk about range, I mean, he really does turn into a cartoon character in that movie, and that has to be my favorite. What's yours of all time?
Jack Nicholson, probably, like I said, about Schmidt. I love it. I mean, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is super iconic, and I love all the other ones listed, but about Schmidt, again, it just showed me, like, this guy still really cares this late in his career, and he was working with a great auteur in Alexander Payne, and it's just amazing to see two great artists get the best out of each other.
Well, what about, does a Woody Allen performance come to mind for you?
I think the two that really stick out for me are Hannah and Her Sisters, and Love and Death, where you kind of have the best of both worlds there, where later in his career, when he was really getting a little more serious, or he's in kind of the midst of being that sort of serious filmmaker where his work was getting nominated for Oscars. I think his acting, like you said, was as good as his writing and directing. And if it is, it might be very specific to that Woody Allen brand where you kind of know what you're getting. As long as it suits the story, it can be equally as brilliant. So Hannah and Her Sisters is great. And you've got the old school stuff, like you mentioned, the Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, and I know that he would probably say Bob Hope. You have him channeling all of those great silent performers in that. So those are my favorite.
Yeah, I just immediately lean towards Crimes and Misdemeanors because I think that not only is he just solid in that, it's also one of my favorite characters he's ever played, just sort of this tragic figure, noble figure who's punished for doing the right thing and being a good person. I just love everything about that character. So moving on, I'm going to go back a little bit. I'm going to say James Stewart, one of the, you know, original great movie stars, you know, who had such a long career and in so many iconic classic movies and from, you know, his work with Hitchcock and all the in Rear Window and Vertigo, which is really a departure for him in terms of the type of character he plays and Man Who Knew Too Much. But then you go back to all the Frank Capra movies that he did. Then you look at what he did with John Ford in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and, you know, all the way up to Five Goes West. But James Stewart and his Screwball work as well, Philadelphia Story. And I think that you know, you're going to – a lot of people will say that his best performance is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where you see the transformation of this wide-eyed, impressionable young politician coming to Washington who quickly realizes that you know, the place is very cynical and makes him cynical, but yet still makes him fight for what he believes is right. But you know, and it is an incredible performance. I want to watch it again, especially with everything that's going on today in Washington. But It's a Wonderful Life to me is you know, it's one of my all-time favorite films, and he's just, it's just a perfect performance. It is the iconic James Stewart performance. I don't see anybody else who could play that role. God forbid they ever remake it. But James Stewart, just one of the all-time classic actors and leading men who could do everything. So that's me.
Yeah, he's on my honorable mention list for sure. I think he's really important for people our age in terms of getting acquainted with older Hollywood as we're growing up as movie fans. He's one of those guys who really sticks out as a movie star whose films might be a little friendlier to young people as they're learning about film history. He just had such a great presence, a great likability. I agree with you. It's Wonderful Life is, I think, the clear choice is his best performance because, I mean, you have one of the greatest movies of all time that is about America and has all of these rich and big ideas about people in general, and who better to channel those ideas than the best movie star, like the greatest actor and movie star alive at that point. So, yeah, great pick. My number two is sort of the modern Jimmy Stewart, Tom Hanks. And I don't think I have to go down a list, but I will. I mean, you look at stuff like Forrest Gump and Castaway and obviously his voice work in Toy Story, his early work in Big. I love his performances. His performances in these movies don't get as much credit as they should. Apollo 13 and Saving Private Ryan are two of his best performances ever. I was just watching Saving Private Ryan the other day on TV, and he's really amazing in that movie. The movie kind of overshadows it, but he's so great in how he carries it. My all-time favorite Tom Hanks performance, one of my favorite performances ever, is from A League of Their Own, where he plays the baseball manager for the Rockford Peaches, Jimmy Dugan. It's one of the funniest performances ever, and it just shows you the perfectly, it shows you Tom Hanks at the peak of his powers, how he was able to blend those comedy sensibilities from earlier in his career and is also able to get serious in some of the more touching moments of that movie, because it deals with the war in World War II and grief, and he really has to turn on the dramatic bits of his arsenal, and he's great. But just on the surface level, he's just so funny in every little pick, in every little beat that he lends to this drunkard former baseball great louse. It, the way he interacts with Gina Davis and, you know, the rest of the team, like Rosie O'Donnell and Lori Petty, he's fantastic. And a lot of it is owed to the script that was written for that movie, and obviously Penny Marshall as a director. But my God, like, just coming back and watching that, I left my head off every single time at every single choice that Tom Hanks makes in A League of Their Own.
Yeah, it's a very funny performance, but it's got one of my favorite sort of sweet, moving moments that I'll never forget when he's trying to take another drink of whiskey, and Gina Davis's character hands him a Coca-Cola instead. And it's just this, he enjoys the Coca-Cola in that moment. It's sort of like this first step towards kind of cleaning up his life for the betterment of himself and everybody around him. I'll never forget that moment. It's just such a sweet, powerful moment in a movie that is certainly a comedy, but still just, man, he should have won Best Supporting Actor for that. For me, I'm just going to say Big, because that was the first introduction I ever had to him, unless I'd watched Dragnet at our cousin's house on HBO maybe at one point. But Big, you know, we saw that in the theater twice, and, you know, he acts like a kid in that film. He acts like he's 13. The moment when he is staying by himself in the hotel and he gets freaked out and scared. It's his first night in the city away from his parents, and there's all this horrible, scary stuff happening outside the hotel room. And he cries and says, calls for his mom. Man, I mean, that is just a fantastic scene, and it's all based on his performance, the way that he, I believe it's just one interrupted shot, as you just watch his face as you hear all this horrible stuff, this guy on the phone outside the room, and you just see his descent from fear to just weak, pure weakness and vulnerability, because he is a little kid. One of my favorite moments in that is when he's alone in the apartment with Elizabeth Perkins, and it's obvious that they're about to sleep together, and she takes off her shirt. She's just wearing a bra, and then she turns off the light, but then he turns the light back on, and his eye contact with her brassiere does not break, because he's not even interested in her anymore. He's just interested in her boobs. And I love that moment, because he turns the light. Like most adults, it's like, oh, let's turn out the lights. But he's like, I'm a kid and I want to see these. I love that moment.
And going back to the shot, the moment you're talking about where he's in the apartment by himself, and you can hear the sounds of New York outside. Am I mistaken? Is there not a sound effect where it's just like, wow, wow?
Well, there's another scene where he's watching, I think it's French Connection 2, or some sniper movie, and there's a shooting. It's a gag where you hear bullets being fired on TV. Then he turns off the TV, waits a couple of seconds, and hears the natural sounds of the gunshots outside as well. So, yeah. Man, I just love that. So they kind of at that point, he'd gotten a little more confident, and he was like, all right, I can hang in the city. But yeah, great pick. Obviously, I mean, he's one of the greats. I'm just looking at his filmography, man. He's just got so many awesome, diverse films, and he continues to work. So he's a treasure for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because you look at late in his career, and now I don't want to say he's phoning it in because he's Tom Hanks and he doesn't really do that, but then you start to see these Da Vinci Code movies, and you see Larry Crown, which I know he directed and obviously was very personal to him, and you just see some of these other movies that don't really register obviously the same way, and you're thinking, well, he's Tom Hanks, he doesn't really have to do this anymore. Right. But then he comes out with things like Captain Phillips, and then Bridge of Spies, and it's just like, wait, no, this is Tom Hanks. He's still the man. He can do whatever he wants and whenever he wants. And, you know, for me, Bridge of Spies is so fresh just because it was a couple of years ago, and I think it's a top five all-time Tom Hanks performance. So he's still one of the greatest working actors.
Absolutely, and I just can't wait to see what he does with Spielberg when they team back up for this movie about the Washington Post and the Pentagon Papers that's supposed to come out before the end of the year. I mean, I'm so freaking pumped about that. So it's my turn for number one.
Yep.
Okay, number one, and bring on the haters, but I'm just talking about who has been a, you know, honestly, this is more of like my favorite movie star is Tom Cruise. I mean, my entire life has just been there consistently delivering, you know, almost every year. I mean, some of his movies have been better than others. He's been part of some really great productions. He's been in part of some movies you want to forget about, some movies that I had, you know, that I have not even seen, like The Mummy this year. But look at his body of work. He's just contributed to, you know, basically the zeitgeist for over 35 years now, starting with Risky Business, Top Gun. You know, he started to do really serious work with Born on the 4th of July, showing that he was a really serious actor to be taken seriously. Few Good Men. But he's been such a go-to for just big budget, high profile Hollywood entertainment. His Mission Impossible series has been great and continues to be as it evolves. You know, Mission Impossible 2, the remake of Notorious. Then you have Eyes Wide Shut. He's this front and center in Stanley Kubrick's last film, and it's so great, and he's great in it. His work in Magnolia, where he was just robbed of the Academy Award that year, and so that Michael Caine could get another one. The guy, it just does so much. I have never even seen Last Samurai, which I think is crazy. But then he does Valkyrie, which was underrated. His comedic turn in Tropic Thunder showed another side of him. In Edge of Tomorrow, fairly recently, or Live, Die, Repeat, whatever you want to call it. I love that movie. So he, you know, I haven't seen The Mummy yet. His last few Mission Impossible movies have been great. I just think that he's still so relevant and still contributing and has been doing so for my entire life. So I just got to say, I mean, yes, you're not going to find as many like great performances as you are Tom. But the guy has just consistently contributed to you know, what Hollywood is and Hollywood movies are and what you want when you go to the multiplex. And has done so many examples of this for so long that I got to say he's number one for me.
I'm totally with you. I love Tom Cruise. I really do. And there's no other actor who cares as much about what he's doing on screen as he does and about the performance, about the movie. You can see it in every performance. And maybe people would use that against him, that he's wearing too much of it on his sleeve, but I think it's endearing, and I think that, you know, Ben Stark and I have talked about how, you know, at this point, at his age, I mean, he's past 50, I believe, at this point, and he's probably definitely our best movie star, our best movie star, too, but our best action movie star in 2017, which is insane, and he keeps upping the ante, obviously, with those Mission Impossible movies. But you're right, I mean, the acting is there, too, and it's hard to find a misstep acting-wise. You know, I haven't seen Rock of Ages. I know you could nitpick with something like Lions for Lambs, maybe, but he's probably good in those movies.
He's good in Lions for Lambs. He is.
Yeah,
that's not one of my favorite films, but, man, his scenes with Meryl Streep are great.
But right, you're right, like Eyes Wide Shut in Magnolia and Minority Report, he's really, really good. But I think Jerry Maguire is probably the Tom Cruise-iest performance there is and probably the best overall. And I would have given him the Oscar in 1996 for Jerry Maguire. As big a fan as I am of Sling Blade, and I know Jeffrey Rush was really good in Shine, obviously. That was probably a supporting performance anyway, but he should have won in 1996. That's like the quintessential Tom Cruise performance, and he's fantastic in it, and he's done great work since then.
That movie like captivated America too.
Yeah,
you know, like it became an instant iconic film. It was a massive hit. Everybody, it just made people feel good. It was like life affirming. Yeah, he should have won.
Yep, and he's as good to me as Dustin Hoffman is in Rain Man too. So you need that performance doesn't get enough credit too. So yeah, Tom Cruise, I'm with you. My number one is Paul Newman. And this one kind of snuck up on me a little bit. And I thought maybe Paul Newman will be an honorable mention for me. But then I just looked at the filmography and I got like 8 or 9 movies that I just rattled off and thought like these movies are really important to me. And Paul Newman is the man. Like he is just so charismatic, it's ridiculous. And I'll just rattle them off.
Yeah.
Slapshot, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, HUD, Cool Hand Luke, Nobody's Fool, The Color of Money, Hudsucker Proxy, and The Verdict. Like, those are movies that, for me, again, are really important to my movie-going life, and I'll never forget them, and he's just so damn good. Like, he can go big, like he does from time to time in something like The Sting, and Hud is a fairly showy performance, or he can play it cool, like he does in something like The Verdict, or Nobody's Fool, or even Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and then he can anchor maybe the all-time greatest profane sports comedy of all time in something like Slapshot, which is directed by George Wally Hill, which is insane. What an amazing trilogy that those two gave us over the years. But, yeah, Paul Newman, he's just so damn cool. Like, he's just so cool, and he's so captivating on screen, and nobody can out-cool him. And when he was at his best, I just don't know if anybody was better than him. And I guess just because he's the star of so many of my favorite movies of all time, I can't help but just say Paul Newman's the best for me.
That's awesome. That's a great pick. You're right. And for me, obviously, Slapshot would be a go-to for best performance, but I got to go with Nobody's Fool. That was so – we watched that over and over again. I'm not sure why we were allowed to. Definitely adult themes in that one. But it's just such an awesome, quiet performance and a beautiful movie. But, man, yeah, awesome. Awesome pick. He's the man. Oh, I never got to say. Did you say what your favorite Tom Cruise performance was?
Yeah, Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire. Okay, yeah. So mine. I'm just gonna say Magnolia. It's just electric. But yeah. Sorry, I wanted to do that before I forgot. But yeah. And I'm glad you said Hud. Otherwise, Dad would have gotten really mad at us.
Well, we finally rented it, Dad.
We finally rented it.
Yeah. I feel like I had to text him and say, I finally saw Hud, Dad. Mm-hmm. He's right. It was great. And. Yeah, and I don't know. Like, he finally won his Oscar in what, 86 or 87 for The Color of Money?
Yeah.
And he's great. I mean, that's a sequel, and he won an Oscar for it, which is crazy, but he's so good. Speaking of Tom Cruise, too, great in The Color of Money also. But I think my favorite overall performance from Paul Newman is probably – I think Hud probably goes the deepest and maybe his best overall, but The Sting – he's just so funny. And like, I've never wanted to just kind of like live in a movie scene as much as I have when he is conning Robert Shaw during the poker game on the train in that movie. And just like the way he works over Robert Shaw is just amazing and so funny, and it just feels so fresh every single time I watch it. So Paul Newman's the man.
Okay, Matt, we're here to talk about your top three favorite actors of all time.
My number three is Tom Cruise. I went back and forth on who would be my third, but I just feel like for all three of these, I wanted to pick people who I felt like were so interesting and kind of transcendent that their presence in a movie made it immediately interesting enough for me to watch, no matter what else I knew about the movie. And Tom Cruise is one of those people. If he is in a movie, I feel like almost without exception, there's something inherently interesting about that movie to me. You know, some of it probably came from just the status that he achieved in the 80s and 90s of just this mega superstardom. From the second he entered Hollywood, he was a big deal and was an immediately fascinating person to watch. I don't know if anybody's been as consistent throughout their entire career from start to finish as Tom Cruise has been too. So he's not really gone through any phases of just like phoning it in. And he's also obviously a guy who, as actors go, is probably as involved in the creative side of the project he works on as anybody out there working today. So to me, all of those things just kind of put him up there. For me, he's just as iconic as we'll probably see in this era.
I mean, he's essentially an auteur of his own movies at this point.
Yeah.
He's also such a physically involved actor. He may be our most physically involved actor at this point. You know, the things that he puts his body through. I mean, that guy has his body trained in such a way that, I mean, there's only a handful of actors ever, you know, I feel like that have been in his you know, that had that ability to not just control their face, their emotions, their tone, but also, you know, their body, the way that Buster Keaton or Fred Astaire or Jimmy Cagney or those guys would have been able to. So I feel like he's the closest thing we have to those guys nowadays. So, yeah, he was definitely on my honorable mentions.
So my number two is a guy that I don't think I can use the term consistency about, unfortunately, but I still, for his body of work, will always have to have him up here, and it's Robert De Niro for me. You just go back to his performances in the 70s and 80s, just kind of still resonate, and they just sort of, there's a lot of diversity in the performances that he did during that era of his career, and so much emotion and power behind so many of them that, you know, even with what he's done the last 20 years, which to me is just sort of shameful and it hurts my feelings to see it. It's impossible for me to hear his name or think about him without thinking about all of the incredible iconic performances that he put in for the first couple of decades of his career. You know, I just, it's hard for me to put too many great adjectives on it, but I just think about one example. It's not even a lead role, but in The Godfather Part II, he plays this sort of, he's obviously a criminal and a guy who we know that later becomes a very powerful and evil person, but we kind of see him in this more vulnerable and, you know, well-intentioned form. And it's amazing that he can simultaneously play a likable and sympathetic person who we also know has such potential for violence in everything he's doing. And I think you can kind of say that about his character from Mean Streets, too. He's a guy with who at any given moment could be very dangerous, and yet he remains somehow very likable and sympathetic and somebody that we're rooting for. So he's always been, I think, very good at playing somebody with a ton of built-up kind of kinetic energy, and yet that doesn't make us necessarily scared of him. It doesn't repel us enough to stop us from rooting for him. And obviously, he has played some really detestable and terrifying characters, too. But I just think he's got an incredible range, and he did so many fascinating and deep and interesting performances in the 70s and 80s in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about the empathy side, I this isn't like the highlight of his career by any stretch of the imagination, but I do feel like the last few roles he's had in the David O. Russell movies that he's been in have been, you know, really compelling and in a way sweet performances, and a side of him that we're not used to seeing or that we haven't seen. So I think that, you know, he's certainly not doing the best work of his career anymore, but, you know, there's filmmakers out there that are capable of getting something good out of Robert De Niro.
And I definitely think he's capable of doing better. I just think he's reached the stage in his career where he's happy to keep drawing paychecks based on a caricature of who he used to be, which is unfortunate to me, but it's not going to diminish, I don't think, the way that people think of him, which should be as one of the great actors of the 20th century.
Absolutely.
So my number one, and I hadn't thought of a connection with any of my others until you mentioned Tom Cruise's physicality. But to me, this is a guy that, as an actor, did, you know, there's people that go back and forth between him and Buster Keaton, but to me, Charlie Chaplin is a guy that I think both as a physical comedian and a stuntman, basically, is as good as there's ever been. And I think as an actor from a sort of empathic, just a the emotion that he conveyed, the likability, the character that he created, the characters that he created, although he's best known for one in particular, I don't think anybody has ever had a combination of being so good at all of the things that he does as Charlie Chaplin is. And obviously he is a filmmaker. I'm probably unfairly boosting him in my rankings for also having been a writer, director, and composer, and sort of had truly had his hands in every single part of everything he made. But his performances are ultimately, I think, what stand the test of time more than anything. He made great films, but they're nothing without his performances and without the incredible ability to connect with audiences with his face, and often without ever speaking a word out loud that the audience could hear. I think I'm probably giving him bonus points for that too. The fact that his performances hold up and they're as good as they are in a pre-sound era. I just think it takes even more body control, if you want to call it that. But that's the thing that amazes me as a person who has sort of halfway attempted to act in little things before. I don't understand how the most impressive thing about an actor to me is that they're capable of truly experiencing an emotion, or at least getting so close to it that you can't tell as a person on the outside. I don't know how someone does that. I don't have that tool in my toolbox as a human being. And it's obviously what the craft of great acting is built on. And Charlie Chaplin's able to do it basically with his hands tied behind his back, and he's still as good as he is. So he's my number one. He's the one that I would most like to watch any piece of film that he appears on anytime, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, with no close-ups either, you know, or not very few close-ups, you know, a lot of wide shots, a lot of full body acting in terms of the camera setups that he was able to do at the time. Wow, a pretty varied list there. Yeah, I mean, you're spanning, you know, numerous decades and generations, but all great picks. If you had to list a handful of honorable mentions, what might they be?
Well, I would say that In the sort of modern end of the spectrum, Christian Bale's been up there for me. He's done a lot of really interesting things in a similar vein to Tom Cruise, I think. He's just instantly compelling. Even in bad movies, I like watching Christian Bale. He was in a stupid Terminator movie and was still pretty compelling to watch in it.
Uh-huh.
And obviously the David O. Russell performances, I think he's really shined in those. From an earlier era to me, I know I sound like this is the most shamelessly stereotypical part of me, that I actually really love Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, but I do. And Pacino to me is, I thought about putting him in there maybe instead of De Niro. But I think there's a smaller window of time where Pacino was kind of a master of what he was doing. But man, he was really, really great when he was in that window. And he's still done some great stuff outside of, I think, his peak. I think about what he did in Godfather 3, which I'll always swear up and down is highly underrated, but especially his performance in it.
Yeah.
It really gets me. It's very moving. I think it's a performance he couldn't have given as a younger actor either. So I think he absolutely has that sort of powerful potential that you kind of see. Even when he's being quiet in a movie, you sense a lot under the surface with Pacino's performances.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, thanks for your time. That was a fantastic list, and I'm sorry that I put you through this. I know that was probably pretty difficult to pick just three.
I feel good about it. I'll sit with this for another 100 episodes at least.
Well, we're never doing it again, so this is it.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.